Chair and honorable members, I'll start with myself with introduction. My name is Mem Messi Jocelyn. I am the Secretary General for the Office of the Chief Justice, and I have a delegation from the office, which is my executive management in the Office of the Chief Justice. I'll ask from my right, the CFO to start introducing himself.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Kasi Kutser. I'm the Chief Financial Officer in the Office of the Chief Justice.
My name, honourable members. My name is Khumule Mumushweu. I am the CEO of the South African Judicial Education Institute.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Itumele Malao. I am the Director for Strategy, Monitoring and Evaluation in the Office of the Chief Justice.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Zongezi Lebaloyi, Chief Director, Corporate Services.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Shamila Nicole. I'm a Director in Court Services in the Office of Chief Justice.
Thank you very much, Ms.
Honourable Chairperson and members, we have sent the presentation and other documents, so we'll start with the presentation. The outline of the presentation, firstly, would like to, before I start, to thank the Chairperson and the committee for inviting us as the Office of the Chief Justice to make our presentation as requested. And we are open to be guided in this journey that we are as a team trying to build the administration for the judiciary. The presentation outline will start with the introduction, the journey map, 2010, when the Office of the Chief Justice was established as a national department, up to date, 2014. Highlights of our achievement in the year that has passed, 2013-14, our mandate as the OCJ, legal mandate, the operational framework of the OCJ budget, human capacity, the priorities, our operational plans for this financial year, and institutional challenges and constraints is our concluding remarks. Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the Office of the Chief Justice is a national department established to provide institutional support to the Chief Justice as part of the administration of the judiciary. Its functions were determined by the Minister for Public Service and Administration at its inception in terms of the Public Service Act 1994. And these are the main functions that were established, were determined when the department was established to provide coordinated legal administration support to the Chief Justice. On this, just to add, Chair and Honourable Members, the Chief Justice wears two caps. One, he is the head of the judicial branch of state, and secondly, he is the head of the constitutional court. Also, to provide communicative relationship management services and intergovernmental international coordination, court administration development of policy norms and standards, support development of judicial policy norms and standards, support the judicial function of the constitutional court, as well as ensuring that the Judicial Service Commission execute its mandate. The Chief Justice is also supported in this instance in promoting regional and international judicial relations, as the judiciary plays a role also in the regional and international space. The journey map from 2010, when the Office of the Chief Justice was established to date, just some few highlights. It started with the secondment of managers from the to the Office of the Chief Justice in 2008, after the Minister and then Chief Justice Sandy Lengwe agreed that there should be impetus to transform or to bring judicial reform and also ensure that the Chief Justice is the head of branches properly supported and supports institutional independence. The proclamation of the OCJ by the President on the 23rd of August 2010. Then there was the determination of the functions that already alluded to that by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Then the process of capacitation of the OCJ started with few SMS members of of Justice and Constitutional Development on the 26th of January 2012 with a view to applying the administrative support functions relating to the JSC, Sajay, and the Constitutional Court to the OCJ so that the OCJ can begin to take charge of matters relating to the judiciary. The appointment of the Secretary General, myself, happened in April 2013 last year. And the 17th Constitutional Amendment Act and the Superior Court Act, which is now legislation, is in operation since 2030. And the delegations were provided to the Office of the Chief Justice to operate effectively by the Minister in terms of the Superior Court Act as well as the Public Service Act. Further, part of our journey is that the DG Justice also has delegated, provided delegations in terms of the public PFMA. The Office of the Chief Justice so that we have or we are able to operate effectively. Some of the highlights and achievements of 2013-14. The first, which is the policy matter, the OCJ institutional model report was submitted to the Minister by the Chief Justice and the Head of Court. This relates to the research that was done by the former Chief Justices Langer and Chaskasson as they then were. Where there was a committee established by the judiciary to make research and make provision and submit to the ministry and the executive the model that the judiciary believes was set institutional independence. That has been provided to the ministry in October last year. The second is the draft strategic plan 2014-19 and the annual performance plan were developed and considered by National Treasury. As members would maybe know, the OCJ does not yet have the budget vote. We are in the process of acquiring that through Treasury. So when we don't have a budget vote, then it means we are part and parcel of the DOJ in terms of strategic planning and the framework. But in anticipation of the OCJ being the independent on its own as a national department, we have gone into the process of drafting the development ST and APP for the years that are coming and make sure that we subject ourselves to National Treasury's requirements so that they can consider and advise on that as preparation. Then another highlight is the capacitation of the OCJ, as I've indicated earlier, the appointment of human capacity and critical staff. Because the OCJ never had any baseline or anything, so we work on the basis of a plan to incrementally institutionalize the organization through capacitation and appointment of critical staff. The building of internal controls and governance structures is one of our highlights. Also, we have appointed the Audit and Risk Management Committee. Again, as I've alluded, we are not yet a budget vote, but we are preparing ourselves. So we have already in place an Audit and Risk Committee approved by the Minister, and we have already gone through the first meeting with the formal meeting with the committee as such in preparation. The other is the establishment of the OCJDAC, that is the Lead Adjudication Committee. As you would know, the organization has to function within the delegations that are given by the DG to myself so that the organization can function. We have the committee that deals with us. And the development of institutional policies, which are required in terms of different areas for operational reasons. Another highlight is the NEEC, the National Efficiency Committee, and the Provincial Efficiency Enhancement Committee, established by the Chief Justice last year, considered establishment in December last year. These are the forums that are established at the national level and provincial level. At the national, chaired by the Chief Justice, and the provincial, chaired by the Vice President, to look at case flow management and court performance, as the Superior Court Act now requires of the Chief Justice develop and monitor the norms and standards for the performance of judicial functions of all courts. The next is the judicial norms and standards were developed as required by the Act, the 17th Constitutional Amendment Act and the Superior Court Act implementation. They were gazetted this year, and the Chief Justice, supported by the OCJ, is in the process of implementation thereof. And members would recall that the Act also requires that the judge's president coordinate the functions of the Ministry of Court relating to judicial functions. That's one of the highlights, the achievements. The approval of the OECD budget program structure in preparation for the vote was approved by the Treasury on the 12th of April 2016. These are part of the building blocks towards the vote. The delegations to the SG by the Minister have already alluded to that. The IT infrastructure is implemented, which involves the migration and the judicial IT domain and website. Just here in the comments, we, as the OCJ, we are part and parcel of the DOJ infrastructure, and as part of separation, as part of development, we are implementing the IT infrastructure so that when we are a vote, we are able to function separately. That phase one is started, and I'll get to it when I come to the checklist. The budget 2013-14 was 123.9 million. And we have the expenditure of 99.84% as the OCJ, which is the first that we have to spend our budget in the Senate. Judicial education, 52 seminars and 1,472 judicial officers, etc., trained in this year, in the year that has passed. And of the 19 recommendations from the JSC, finally appointed by the President, and all of them we are accepting. Coming to the mandate, I'll be brief here, Chairperson and Honourable Members, because I assume that we all are aware of Section 165 of the Constitution, which vests the judicial authority in the courts. The Constitution 17th Amendment Act designates the Chief Justice as the head of the entire judiciary, as a branch of state, and empowers the Chief Justice with the responsibility to establish norms and standards for the exercise of judicial functions of all courts and monitor say in all courts, as well as develop guidelines and the protocols relating to the judicial functions of all courts. The Constitution Amendment also sought to assign the Constitutional Court as the apex court so that it is not only constitutional matters but as to say the final arbiter. Legislative mandates, Superior Court Act. I will not go through those chapters, they're quite clear. The South African Judicial Education Institute Act, the Chief Justice is the chairperson of the SAJ Council. There is a council established to provide judicial education to all judicial officers, both judges, magistrates, and are all relating to dealing with judicial functions. The responsibility for the training of magistrates has been transferred from Justice College to SAJ since January 2012. In the past, the magistrates were trained through the Justice College attached to the Department of Justice, and after the passing of this act, integration of magistrate training into SAJ happened. The Judicial Service Commission Act, the Chief Justice is the chairperson of the JSC, which has responsibility to recommend candidates for judicial appointment as well as deal with matters of complaints against judges. The PFMA and the Public Service Regulation Act are quite obvious and applicable to the OCJ as it is a national department established in terms of the Public Service Act. Operational framework of the OCJ. Chairperson, due to the fact that the OCJ doesn't have a budget vote yet, it currently operates as follows. In terms of transitional agreements between OCJ and the Justice Department, we are still a sub-program in the DOJ strategic plan, as I already alluded to when I was dealing with the development of our draft plan. Currently, the OCJ established 2014 ACP of the DOJ, and in terms of the Superior Court Act, the Secretary General is the accounting officer for all budgets relating to the Superior Court, but not in terms of the PFMA until we have the budget vote in place. In terms of the preparations for the budget vote, preparation chair, the Treasury has a checklist that they normally would require of all departments that are seeking to acquire the vote to comply with in terms of the framework. The OCJ budget state of readiness goes as follows. I've covered the strategic plan and the annual performance plan that we have already submitted our first draft in August 2013 to National Treasury, as well as both the plan and the APT 1516 will be resubmitted to National Treasury in August 2014, which is the second round. I must say here that we have received a good guidance from the National Treasury, and our second submission, I think, will go quite well. Approval of the budget program structure by the National Treasury completed 2013 April. The department is expected to have the following accounts: the TGM account, deposits and interdepartmental account, petty cash and charges accounts, which were completed quite earlier in 2011, October. Implementation of the IT infrastructure in terms of phase one, which is the migration of the OCJ into the judiciary domain, has happened already. The second phase, which is the content management and systems and unified communications, tend to start in this financial year, so in this month, 2014. Creation of transversal systems, BAS, LASPAR, and LOGIS. The DOJ will be requesting the migration of the OCJ from its transversal system so that FISA can effect that. And the target date for that is the 15th of July, so that FISA can commence with the hardware consideration to set up the OCJ as a transversal system standalone. The warrant voucher books ordered from government printers can only be done once the vote is implemented, planned for April 2015. The department must be registered as an employer who serves compensation funds, pension and medical funds. Those are completed in October 2011 mostly, in November 2011, the medical funds in August 2011. The appointment of the CFO, October 2013. The system controller appointment, June 2013. And the appointment of the audit and risk committee, as I've already alluded to, has been completed and is functional as you speak since May 2014. The approved budget program structure of the OCJ is approved by National Treasury on the 12th April 2013 is as follows: Program 1, Administration; Program 2, Judicial Support and Court Administration, which includes the Superior Court; and Program 3, Judicial Education and Research. As part of the program budget structure for the OCJ, the direct charge from the National Revenue Fund, which is the judge's salary, will also be transferred to the Office of the Chief Justice, meaning that the OCJ will have to manage the remuneration act of the judges. I will head over to the CFO to deal with this slide, and I'll see what it is.
figures were also derived from the figures received from the Justice Department of Justice, but we have to take note that we have not yet managed this budget. It's only the 123 million and the current 134 million that we are managing at this stage. When it comes to the expenditure, this is just a summary of the 2013-14 budget expenditure of the Office of the Chief Justice. You will note that we've spent 99.84% of the 123.9 million that was allocated to us.
In terms of our unfunded priorities and mandates, 14-15, 15-16, we estimate the budget shortfall, to be indicated as follows. We need 6.5 million to capacitate the OCG. The budget to implement the Superior Court Act, and the priorities with regard to implementation of the Superior Court Act relates to capacitation of the judges' president's offices. Currently, each judge president sits with a secretary, but if you look at the responsibilities given by the Superior Court Act, it requires more resources to be able to assist them to do the judicial administration relating to their functions. Remember also, honorable members, that the Superior Court Act for the first time requires of judges presidents to coordinate the functions, judicial functions relating to the magistrate's court, which has never been the case before. And then the development of the judicial monitoring system on court performance, the figures are estimations. The development of the judicial monitoring system is to also support the Chief Justice and the Judges President in court performance monitoring so that they are able to implement the norms and standards referred to earlier, which have been approved and gathered and in the process of being implemented, so that they can be able to account for the performance of the court. Judicial education, 15 million to augment the current deficit in the SAJ budget to be able to do effective training of the magistrates and the judges. The rental of offices for the Office of the Chief Justice, 6.5 million per annum. We are currently not having sufficient official space to be able to operate as the OCJ. And also with expansion as we grow building the organization, it is important that we get appropriate space to be able to do that. We are engaging with the DOJ as well as Department of Public Works in partnership so that we can be able to acquire appropriate office space as we grow. Additional furniture, obviously any new organization would need to have the furniture to be able to operate appropriately. And that is linked to offices because we need to have both at the same time. Operational costs relating to the transport delegation of superior court functions, we estimate that there's going to be additional operational costs. The OCJ does not have, when we take over the administration of the superior court, we do not have a footprint in the provinces. We are only located in Johannesburg. And all the superior courts are throughout the country. So we have to put our heads together as to how we're going to deal with the operational cost of having to service those courts effectively from Johannesburg. Because the current model of the DOJ is that there is a regional office in each province in terms of which the courts are supported. So some of this, those are some of the issues that we have to look at. Remuneration costs as a result of the delegation of superior court functions also is an additional cost that we estimate we will need moving forward. And I would like to highlight here that, honorable chairperson and members, that we are not for in any big bang approach with regards to the delegation of transfer of the high court, of the superior court. We are in a development stage, and we think that it will be appropriate to take a phased-in approach so that as we grow as the OCJ, we are able to move in regards to that, because resources are not in abundance, and calls are currently being managed, and therefore we should do a phased-in approach because we can't take over all at once. There is a lot of engagement, a lot of negotiations that we'll have to get in place between the OCJ and the DOJ in terms of those that phase-in, and also the support in the initial stages until the OCJ is able to manage the calls appropriately. Engagement with National Treasury via DOJ on the unfunded mandate. 14-15 budget was allocated to the OCG was inflation-based. I think we have already alluded to this even last year. And if you consider year-by-year growth in terms of mandates and support resources, we engaged with National Treasury, but obviously the economic climate, the general budget constraints, and as we all know, the cost-cutting measures imposed by National Treasury because of the economic situation has its own implications. And reprioritizing the department's baseline to fund shortfalls and new mandates. That's what Treasury actually indicated to us. And I personally have been in contact with the National Treasury. They have indicated, and even in the budget meetings at the cluster level, they have indicated that the department needs to look within and reprioritize within. But it puts us in a very difficult situation because we operated without any baseline from the past. So it's one of the issues that we continue to engage with National Treasury on with regards to resources. And they have advised both the OCJ department to deal with the delegation of functional transfers on the OCJ of superior costs before it can consider any budget, additional budget to the OCJ. In terms of staffing, currently we sit with a post-establishment of 266, with 146 filled and 120 vacant. We are 55% filled and 45% vacant. The second layer management has been appointed, which constitutes the OCJ Exco. At SMS level, we are 22 filled, 9 vacant, and unfunded. So we are 31 at SMS level. Level 1 to 12, 124 filled. Triple 1 vacant and unfunded. And the total is 235. So the both 235 and 31 make 2. Our profile at SMS level, we are 71% filled and 29% vacant. We, on the gender, we are 73% male and 27% female. 86% black and 14% white. 22 filled, 9 vacant, 31 I think is already in the previous slide. I won't go into the detail of the figures here. Okay? We are aware of the gender profile of 73-27, which we are working on to make sure that as we fill posts according to priority, we focus on the issues of gender. Level 1 to 2, 12, we are 53% filled, 47% vacant. We are 40% male and 60% female, 87% black and 18% white. We are better at the gender level when it comes to level 12, 1 to 12. Our priorities and highlights, the highlights are as follows. Securing the OCJ budget vote, acquiring the home for the judiciary, administration of the judiciary, that is the headquarters for the Office of the Chief Justice. Currently, as we stand, Chairperson and honorable members, we are supposed to be vacating the offices that we occupy in Jura House, the three floors, because the owner is selling the property. So we are working, as I've said, with Public Works and DOJ to make sure that we can get appropriate accommodation. Smooth transfer and delegation of functions from DOJ in terms of the superior cost. Capacitation of the OCJ to carry the current mandate from a human and systems perspective. Judicial case flow management, which the Chief Justice is pioneering together with a committee of judges backed by the Nonsense Standard. That have been approved and gazetted are being implemented. Review of the case flow management court rules, which the Chief Justice will be engaging the Minister on. The judicial led court administration model, the same. The Chief Justice will be engaging the minister thereon. Judicial education, introduction for instance of e-learning because economy constraints, the training takes a lot of budget, and e-learning would come a long way in alleviating and effecting cost-cutting measures for us. Judicial court modernization, e-filing and record management is one of the things that needs attention as soon as we are assist with the court. Communication and judicial outreach program, the process to make sure that the OCJ also has is marketed, branded, and as a fully fledged department needs to be given impetus, and we are looking at that so that we are able to put the Office of the Chief Justice National Department in the same space as all other departments. Implementation of legislation, the Superior Court Act and the Superior Court Act have alluded to some of the highlights, like supporting the judge's president to be able to carry their mandate, court performance, etc. Additional capacity to carry new mandates. Office of the JP has already indicated that court performance monitoring system is very crucial so that both the Chief Justice and the judge's president are able to account for the performance of the court and the monitoring of non-standards. Our operational plan for 2015-2020 strategic plan needs to be developed. Our annual performance plan for 2015-16 must be developed. We must acquire the budget vote from Treasury and hoping that with regards to our checklist, Treasury will grant us in the next financial year. The plan is that in this financial year, in October, we'll have a transfer payment from arrangement with the Department of Justice. Continue efforts to secure sufficient budget for the OCJ. The infrastructure will have to be enhanced also. As I've indicated, we have already started the migration from justice.org.gov.za to judiciary.org.za. We will also be including the upgrade to accommodate the superior costs when we administer them in the near future. We seek also to ensure that 90% of our funded approved critical posts are filled. We have alluded earlier that we have a shortfall in terms of the remuneration budget. Judicial case law management implemented in all high courts. The current project that the Chief Justice is leading with the Committee of Judges to implement case law. We have already taken the resolution of the heads of courts to roll out to all the high courts, and plans are in place to also look at the few magistrate courts that can also be part of the project. System in place to monitor performance and implement the nonsense standards. Secretarial support to the JSC, the Judicial Conduct Committee, and the tribunal. Members would know that the Secretariat for the JSC is part of the OCJ administration, and therefore all the statutory structures that are in place for the JSC to execute in mandates are given by the Office of the Chief Justice. Reduction of audit outcomes. We are mindful as the executive of the OCJ that we have to manage issues of internal controls and systems to make sure that when we are audited both internally and externally, we can make sure that we are really getting a clean audit. And as I've already alluded to, Chairperson, we have already a risk audit and risk committee established and is functional, although we are not yet a budget for. This is meant to make sure that we train ourselves and prepare ourselves also for the future. Judicial training sessions, 63 were planned for this current year. Curriculum development and learning management through the council committees is giving attention to, and the executive support to the Chief Justice and judicial stakeholder relations are managed. The Chief Justice as the head of judiciary and other leaders of the judiciary are also playing a role in the regional and international space. The Chief Justice is the vice president of the CCJA, the Constitutional Conference of African Constitutional Bodies. The Constitutional Court is a member of the World Conference on Constitutional Justice. and the Chief Justice plays a role internationally in all constitutional associations and events internationally. So we have the responsibility to support him in that instance. Recently, the CCJA, through the leadership of the CCJA president and vice president, did submit to the AU a program for Africa, for African judiciaries to be assisted also with program to advance their mandate. And that is one of the aspects that also have to be supported with the Chief Justice as the head of the judicial branch. So just in this age, I think this chapter I'll skip because I've already alluded in detail most of these aspects. Institutional challenges and constraints. One of our main challenge, Honorable Chairperson and members, is office space. The current office space is not really sufficient for what we are now. And I'm talking only in terms of current complement of staff and operations that we are running. However, we will really explore the opportunity that is arisen when we move out so that we can get a better office space. Dependency on DOJ institutional support systems. This is unavoidable because we have to be supported by the DOJ until the OCCA can be on its own. So it is a challenge and a constraint, but at the same time it can be looked at as a benefit to us because at least we have the support. Insufficient budget, resourcing structure, systems and infrastructure. For like any other new department or institution, we need resources to be able to build the organization to be where it requires to be. Lastly, I have alluded to chairperson and members to the lack of footprint in the provinces, that is with regards to superior costs. This is a challenge which I think ourselves and the Department of Justice will find our way to make sure that the OCJ is supported as it takes the administration of the superior court. And in conclusion, I would like Chairperson on behalf of the OCJ team to thank the portfolio committee, and we look forward to your guidance and support to ensure that the OCJ is better positioned to deliver on its mandate, and I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Josima. I think your presentation, to those that don't know that you are a sub-problem, they wouldn't believe that you are a sub-problem, because it's well done.
a year or with in Braamfontein, and that's something we could look to discuss into our program sometimes, where we meet at a different level just to discuss matters of common interest, common concern, separate to this, which is the budget submission. And that's something that I'll ask you, Chair, just to consider whether we've got space in our program going forward to have that meeting with members of the judiciary itself. But just from my side at this stage, I'd just like to hear about that legislation, Chair, that is obviously pending. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. Honourable Sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you also for the presentation. I'd like to address my question to the MTEF budget projections, specifically to the CFO. Did I understand that the budgets for the Supreme Court of Appeal judges are not yet within this budget? Is that the case? But even if it's not the case, if you look at the amount of money that has been appropriated for the Constitutional Court, and rightly so, and you compare that with the amount budgeted for the Supreme Court of Appeal, and you divide it by the number of justices of the Supreme Court of Appeal and of the Constitutional Court, on average we spend about 12.2 million rands per year on the Constitutional Court per justice, and 1.3 million rands per Supreme Court of Appeal judge. And I just worry that the Supreme Court of Appeal isn't properly resourced in terms of research capacity and other forms of assistance in a way that would allow it to operate as effectively as the Constitutional Court does. The second question that I'd like to ask is this, and it relates to the challenges that the Secretary General referred to going forward. And quite rightly, we are busy expanding the high courts in South Africa into the provinces, and we're establishing a high court in Mpumalanga and one in Limpopo, and that is to make justice more accessible to people. But at the same time, you allude to a challenge in making the support available in, as you call it, the lack of footprint in the province. I'd just like some sort of idea about what plans you have to both capacitate the existing courts and to capacitate the courts that are still to be established within the medium-term expenditure frame. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the visitors for their presentation. My interest is in the judicial education and research. The budget appears to be quite small. I'm a little concerned as to why that is. If you could perhaps elaborate on that. And then the Judicial Education Institute, how far is that? Has it been properly set up, and is it up and running, and how many judges attend that and train it, and also magistrates, do they receive their training there? Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't hear much about magistrate, maybe And indeed, you try to rationalize the percentages in terms of the number of emails on SMS and level 1 to 12. We're hoping to see improvement in that regard in the future. And you indicated that 19 judges were appointed. How many out of the 19? One other thing that you indicated was that because we're still waiting for transfer of money working with national treasury so that you can be independent from the Department of Justice, you don't see yourself as an accounting officer. I think you are an accounting officer in terms of the public finance management. Until such time that you're completely separate from the Department of Justice, but where I'm sitting, I'm thinking that your duties are not that. You are the accounting officer. I mean, the chief justice is the chief of the police in the meantime. When are you going to incorporate the next course? You didn't say anything about incorporation of next course. In terms of the IT infrastructure migration, it's a good idea in terms of case flow management. But one other thing that was a problem in some states was the off-site storage. I don't know whether that comes to competency. So the files that are long and this was creating a crisis. If you can just clarify on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also have a question in respect of the staffing. And as you indicate, currently the courts are being managed quite well as well, even though it is now the function to be taken over by the OCJ. Given the fact that it is managed at the moment, the question is whether some of those staff are to be seconded to yourself or transferred to yourself, or whether you are intent on filling these positions you are currently having and unfilled with new people. And then in addition to that, I want to ask the question, it would seem that there's going to be quite an impact, monetary impact, on the taxpayer once all of these positions have been filled, and it's not quite clear whether the Department of Justice's budget will decrease by the same amount yours will increase once you're fully functional. If you can just comment on that, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I also want to thank them for a brilliant presentation. It is in depth. I just have two. One is a question, I think one is a comment. On your unfunded priorities, which also touches on your mandate 2014-2015 as well as 2015-2016, you have a shortfall of 89 million estimated. I just want your comment, how is that going to impact on your productivity, especially because under your listed activities, the development of a judicial monitoring system called performance. And I think you can be helpful as a department if your monitoring system is not in place. You don't know if you are doing well. I'm not sure if I'm the only one that's concerned about it, because you have highlighted it, but you have not really commented on how it's going to affect your effectiveness. And then my other one is just a comment and a question. You reflect in terms of your gender level 1 to 12, a very good male-female balance. It starts getting skewed on your SMS level. I think it's indicative of most organizations, sometimes race, sometimes gender. It's easy to get level 1 to 12, but then something just gets stuck when you get to the senior management level. I want to caution you, because we are still new, you can correct it. You do not fall back into that scenario where your gender representation is where your junior people and your senior people. Organizations are transformed from senior level, never from bottom up.
receiving the mail is that most charges have been in line with the apparently the special framework. And other issue, Chair, is just to raise with them that as a committee we have a view that we need to change the whole legal system, not necessarily the judicial, but the whole legal system in South Africa. What role are these things have to be playing in this process? Because from where I'm sitting, I think we have quite a pivotal role to play in terms of ensuring that we just transform entirely the legal system, particularly from the police up until to the community correction centers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bonga. May I just over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Starting with the first question with regards to the preparation of legislation to take the Office of the Chief Justice to phase two, similar to the Auditor General. Our response is that the submission of the Chief Justice institutional models to the Ministry entails a policy position or proposals from the judiciary, which the Chief Justice and the judiciary were intending to inform the policy in the form of a bill moving forward. So in the previous discussions between the Minister and the Chief Justice, they have indicated that as soon as the judiciary's inputs are received, the process relating to the bill that will take the judiciary or the administration of the judiciary to the next level will then take place. Obviously, policy is the terrain of the executive, and the judiciary have made their input through that request, which will be resubmitted to the new minister by the Chief Justice, obviously, in due course. So it is not, in our view, within the judiciary's terrain to develop bills, the executive, so the inputs are there in the model report, which is within, it was given to the previous minister, of course. With regards to the proposal to meet the judiciary by the committee is welcome, or I can convey that to the Chief Justice or the Chairperson could do that. It will be welcome, and I maybe I could, Chairperson, with your permission, throw in that we will appreciate if the committee can come to see for themselves where we are squatting. Maybe it will give a proper appreciation of what we are saying, because sometimes when you speak, it's like we're exaggerating. We are not in a space where even the Chief Justice can invite his counterpart internationally to come there as the home of the judiciary. It's just not possible. Deal with the MTF projections, then I'll take over. Okay. Go on.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question around the Supreme Court of Appeal versus the Constitutional Court budget. I think what we need to clarify here is where it says Constitutional Court in brackets OCJ. That includes the total administration of the Office of the Chief Justice as well as the Constitutional Court administration. Remember, we are currently a sub-program within the approach of the Department of Justice, and that sub-program is Constitutional Court. So the actual budget of the Constitutional Court is, at this stage of that 123 million, the Constitutional Court's budget, let me just go to that figure quickly, is only 57 million is for the Constitutional Court. But then I also have to explain that 57 million includes the total salary bill of the Office of the Chief Justice as well in the sub-program. So it's actually a very complicated situation currently for us, because the sub-program stays constituted. Constitutional Court. But I also have to just mention that the remember it doesn't include the salaries of judges. It's only the administration portion.
The other part of the question dealt with the disparity between the Constitutional Court and the SCA, if you downscale that to cost the judge. But maybe one comment that I want to make, Chair, Honourable Chair members, is that the Constitutional Court was historically differently resourced as the Apex Court historically. And obviously when the administration for the judiciary came, we got subsumed into that. That is how the CFO was explaining it. But now that all the superior courts are in the horizon to be administered under the judiciary, obviously it will be our task to make sure that the integration and resources are dealt with in a manner that gives recognition to balancing between the different courts. But at this stage, we are not there yet, at that stage. But we take note of those comments and we'll make sure that as we move forward, we give consideration to that. The challenges regarding to the MTF, the plans to capacitate the court moving forward. Our response is that because, as I've said, we have issues with lacking support. There will be negotiations with the Department of Justice to make sure that as we take over the superior courts, relative to what resources have been dedicated to the support in the courts, it comes to the OCJ so that we are able to be leveraged because resources are not in abundance. So our plan is to make sure that we agree that, and in principle we have actually agreed with the OCJ, with the DOJ, that certain resources will be made available to the OCJ to augment the capacity so that when we take calls, we are in a better space. In terms of the figures, I've indicated that I have even personally engaged Treasury. They've been very clear. Until such time that we've taken over the superior court, then let's talk about any additional funds. And I think it's a fair comment from them, because how do they give us the funds when they don't know what it is that we're going to be getting? Then we start talking from there. Judicial education, I will give Dr. Mushu to deal with that, and the CFO will come on the budget.
Chairperson and honorable members, the institute is operating, although it's on that small, very, very small budget. The government is in place, the council consisting of 24 members, judges, magistrates, academy, traditional leader, advocates, attorney, is in place and is meeting, as well as the standing committees. Currently, we are operating according to the approved budget structure by National Treasury, which you have seen that the judicial education has been put together with the research. And in terms of the details for the training that can be provided in much detail to Parliament, the staffing, we've got 10 members, including myself, and support services to the Institute. And unfortunately, for now, we're still relying on experienced magistrates and judges for training. We're working with Justice on recruiting judicial educators. We're working on the model with them quite at an advanced stage so that we can at least have in-house judicial educators and ensure that our numbers in terms of training increase. So relying on those experienced magistrates, which also have their own control, is another one of the challenges that we are facing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you want to comment on this budget? Okay.
Honourable Chairperson, yes, just on the question of the budget of Sajay, you will see in terms of our unfunded mandates and priorities slide, we've indicated that we would need another 15 million just to ensure that we can properly budget for the training of magistrates and especially the newly appointed magistrates who are to be appointed during this.
and why not. Unfortunately for now, the magistrate's administration of lower courts is not part of the OCJ mandate. Therefore, it lies outside our responsibilities. Obviously, in terms of other certain aspects, like SAGE does training for magistrates, and the judicial functions which are given responsibility by the Chief Justice, by the Superior Court Act, we have to support that. But in all fairness, we are not necessarily administering the Superior, I mean the lower court. They are part of the DOJ, and they are planned for the future, in a mature way. Section 11 of the Superior Court Act, whether the minister has delegated that, the response is that yes, the minister did in April delegate to the Secretary General in terms of Section 11, the powers in terms of Section 11 as indicated in the Act. So that is in place. We have, and we have worked with the DOJ on that, on the delegations downwards in the organization. Rental of offices, I'll ask the ADCF also make comments on that, the rental versus the building, the options, and the implications thereof.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you. Yes, the long-term view is that the head office of or the home of the judiciary will be a building that has to be built, not even procured. There are views, especially also from the Chief Justice, that it should be somewhere close by or on Constitutional Hill, which makes a lot of sense. But that's a long-term vision. Everybody knows that it might take 7 to 10 years just to build a proper home for the judiciary. Currently, the rental issue is that we are in a C-minus, grade C-minus building, according to the DPW standards. The procurement process has now been kicked off, and the policy in terms of our discussions with them is to put the separate branch of state in a B-plus rental building. They don't rent A-grade buildings, they just build A-grade buildings, which makes a lot of financial sense. So we are looking at a B-grade, B-plus rental building in conjunction with DPW and then obviously Department of Justice, where the budget currently lies.
Thanks, Chairperson. The vacancy rate, we note a lot of my judges' comments on the gender, especially as raised by another honourable member on the women at the SMS level. We will work on making sure that we improve that profile. We hope by the next time we come, it will be better. But maybe just to indicate that during my tenure, April up to now, at SMS level, there were 9 appointments. Four of which were women. So in the year that passed, that's not an excuse, in the year that has passed, at least out of the 9, 4 were women. So we will make sure that we really take serious note of that and the vacancy with respect to that. On the accounting officer, I welcome the comments, man. Thanks very much. We are grateful for the comments. Especially, you were spot on with regards to Section 54 of the Superior Court Act. It's very clear that the Secretary General is the accounting officer. So, thanks very much for those words. Incorporation of magistrates, I've already touched on that. It is for the future, except for two things on training, as well as the Chief Justice's role in terms of the judicial functions of the court. IT infrastructure, the off-site storage, is still within the purview of Department of Justice, and to the extent that it will affect the High Court, it will be one of those aspects that we'll have to, between us and the Department of Justice, see how we manage those as the transition happens. I'm not in a position to really comment in detail on that, but we are aware that there are certain projects which are in the space of the Superior Court, which when the administration comes, we'll have to deal with in that sense. Whether the staff of the Superior Court will be secondary transferred to the OCJ, we are advised that about 1,400 staff of the High
subject to the DOJ and the OCJ further engagement. As members will be aware, there's a new minister. The minister has to be properly briefed, and then the process will move faster from there. So we have already indicated and alluded to the minister also. We made a presentation to the minister of the OCJ when he called us for the briefing last week. We have touched on this, and he had indicated that we need to move with speed. The monetary impact on the taxpayer once the vacancies are filled, and whether the DOJ budget will decrease. Technically speaking, when the Superior Court Administration crosses, obviously function follows, resources follows function, and it will be a natural course that there will be a certain level of decrease in the budget when you take the Superior Court to the OCJ. But in terms of whether the filling of the vacancies is a matter that we will have to see, to what extent are we able as the OCJ to carry what we are taking over and where we are at this point in time. Because remember, honorable members, that the 1,400 that staff that are lying in the Superior Court will still be doing what they've been doing all the time. Coming over. The critical part is the support that has been given to the courts at the national and regional level as it stands. And that is where, as I've indicated before, we will have to really look at the Department of Justice and how they're going to assist us in that regard. And they have, as the DOJ, committed to assist the OCJ to make sure that we are able to stand on our 2 feet. The CFO will deal with the next question.
Was the shortfall of 89 million, how will that impact on the productivity of the department and how can it hamper the progress? Obviously, we will have to manage the functions that we are performing within our current capabilities as much as possible, but in terms of the agreements with the Department of Justice, it will not be as the Secretary General indicated, a big land approach when the functions are transferred. They have indicated that it will be a hand-holding process, so especially at national and regional level, where certain of the support functions to the Superior Courts lie, we will have to enter in the interim inter-service level agreements and memorandums of understanding, where those functions will still have to be performed, maybe at national and regional level by the DOJ in terms of an agreement with the Office of the Chief Justice. As and when we then obtain the resources to fill the vacancies or reach agreements of which resources and personnel from national and regional level should also be forming part of the transfer, then that would happen. But obviously the aim is not to let service delivery go, or to decrease service delivery to the public. So we will just have to manage this process within the transfer as an incremental approach. But the National Treasury will have to be advised that there are certain funds that they will have to increase the baseline for us in order for us to take over the functions, at least initially. And that is why we indicated the last two bullets on the slide, the 15 million and the 20 million respectively, is what we foresee that we will need as part of the operational budget, that we would need immediately in our either the adjustment budget process going forward or in the new MGE submission for the next financial year. I know 15 million and 20 million sounds like a lot, but if you look at the bigger picture in terms of budgets of national departments, it's actually a drop in the ocean, 35 million increase of the operational budget of the department. But that is something we will have to negotiate with National Treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. The next question was relating to, was a comment from the honorable member relating to level 1 to 12. Gender profile and the opportunity to correct it. We thank you for the comments and we will work on it as already indicated. The transformative imperatives regarding the magistrate, the number of judges out of the 19 judges, how many were black? Unfortunately, Chairperson, may I, with your permission, give you the breakdown later? I don't have the statistics with you. I don't want to fuss up. I'll provide the answer to the Honourable Members in due course. Yes, with regards to gender. However, maybe I think the minister last week, when he was making in his speech, certain statistics were given, and maybe just want to quote from one of the aspects that he that was alluded to. We have now 155 black judges out of a total of 243. So the number of female judges stands at 79, as we stand. So what we will do, Chairperson, is that we will give the committee a breakdown of this 249, and including the question that has been asked with regard to the 19, which is the last judge that was appointed, in terms of breakdown of gender, when we have the details. No, we will do it today. Somewhere today after, just as we leave, we'll get the information and forward to. The last question, Chairperson, was the change transformation relating to the entire justice system from the police, etc. Just to maybe the comment that one can make is that the judiciary do make inputs on the issues of transforming the entire system from time to time, and that is why the Chief Justice, for instance, is pushing for the case law management court rules to be looked at so that they can facilitate case law management from the judicial side. But the entire spectrum relating to policy on this would lie with the executive, but the judiciary to make their inputs in relation to that. I would end it from there, Chairperson. I'm not sure if I've covered all the we've covered all the questions, if there's anything left out.
No, just on the parity of the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court, I think the Secretary General did point out that a lot more resources have been allocated to the Constitutional Court because it is the apex court. And is an issue which the previous Parliament did raise concerns about the resourcing of the Supreme Court of Appeal. But the resourcing is not on parity when it comes to your researchers, your judges, secretaries and that. And I think it is something that one needs to continually look at to try to, whilst one appreciates the Constitutional Court is the apex court and does have additional requirements, purely when it comes to resources per judge, I think there is a slight imparity almost. But we do appreciate the fact that there are budgetary constraints. I see the FCA's budget has been increased quite substantially as well. But it is an issue that was of concern to the previous committee as well. And it is something we need to look at ongoing. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's
just clarity in terms of administration within the office. You get support from SAGE, FCA, JSC. But SAGE is here. And how do you link with TSC and all the other structures? Because even now, we ask you some of the questions that we're supposed to be having from the JSC. What's the link?
Thanks, Chairperson. The constitutional and legislative of statutory bodies linked to the judiciary are administered under the Office of the Chief Justice Administration. In other words, the secretary for the JSC is part of the OCJ. The administration of the FJ Judicial Education Institute is part of the OCJ. Therefore, they form the structure and administration of the OCJ. So their budget also are part of the Office of the Chief Justice. So the link is there. The recognition of the constitutional independence of the JSC is there. We don't interfere in that, but the administration and the support is given by us as the OCJ. So it has been built into the OCJ component. In other words,
maybe let me just illustrate this through a structure chairperson example. We have at the executive level in the OCG, the Secretary General, who is the accounting officer. And then under that, we have the CEO of the SAG. And then we have the chief director responsible for the private office of the chief justice to give support to the OCG. And we have the secretary for the JSC and also who's also the head of policy within the OCG. And then we have court services as a unit. Then we have corporate services and then obviously the CFO. So within our structure under the Secretary General, we have this top one. And the JSC and SAG are also administrative supports to the bodies as part of the structure. And even in the budget program structure, if you look at program one, obviously is the generic in all government departments. If you look at program three, judicial education and research, that is where the JSC and SAG are supported in this program. So they are built into the program structure of the OCG. I'm not sure if I have explained sufficiently, Chairman.
And just to add on what the Secretary General has said, the Council of SAG has worked on amending the SAG Act, where currently it sits as a DG of Justice, the accounting officer. The suggested amendment, proposed amendment, is that the accounting officer should be the Secretary General. That amendment bill has already been submitted to DOJ. We are hoping that it's going to serve on this committee sometime soon.
It's quite clear that the honourable members are very satisfied with the progress that we have made in the establishment of the Office of the Chief Justice. But quite clearly, the image of that office, according to your account, leaves much to be desired. And it's something that will need to be attended to urgently. And I think the honourable members also want to be associated with the good work that we are doing. And that's why they would welcome a visit as soon as possible if that can be arranged. The whole question of transformation, I think it's very important. And in that regard, the institute can play a major role. So I think resourcing that institute as well is something that needs urgent attention. So as this committee, we will give you our full support and make sure that you are well resourced to take your work to completion. But your submission was very good and very, very encouraging. We want to commend you for that. I can see that the honourable members want to release you so that you can continue the good work.
Thank you, Chairperson. On behalf of the team, we thank the Chair and the honourable members, and we stand to be guided going forward by the team.
Thank you. just get an electronic copy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you. Thank you.
like to first, Chair, if we may, request an indication of how long the meeting is going to be, given the fact that we had provided a very substantive presentation so that we know how to take it, if it may please the House. Thank you. spoken about deal with the establishing of a legislative framework for the Chief Justice to exercise his or her judicial leadership responsibilities supported by the Office of the Chief Justice, which is already in place, prescribing a legislative mechanism for the rationalization of high courts, which is a project we have already started with Chair, the providing of the delegation of certain functions flowing from the Superior Court Act to the Office of the Chief Justice. That is work, Chair, that is now underway. Following the finalization of the Superior Court Act and the discussions with the OCJ, the following initiatives are envisaged for 2014-2015 financial year. The transfer and administration of all superior courts to the OCG. The establishment of fully functional internal controls and accounting systems for the OCG, assisting them to be able to create their own vote so that their vote is independent of that of the Department of Justice, and the strengthening of the governance structures of the South African Judicial Education Institute. When we then get to legislative mandates, Chair, we derive our legislative mandates from various statutes. The legislation providing the establishment of the superior courts and the lower courts as well as the specialist courts are what, among others, bind us going forward. The Superior Court Act of 2013, the Act provides the assignment of certain functions to the Office of the Chief Justice, and may I just indicate what those functions are. Some of these functions relate to the actual functioning in the court environment, and that would speak to the registrars and the like functions. These are the functions that we will be transferring in not too distant a future. We've already given the delegations to the Office of the Chief Justice for them to consider the delegations and see if they are satisfied with the content of those delegations and whether we have not left anything out. As soon as that process has been finalized, we should then move to the government processes of approval by our minister. And the delegation, if there's anything like that in English, from the DG, direct transference to the Secretary General. Chairperson, just briefly, on the Magistrates Court Act, currently the Magistrates Court Act as it stands, it requires a little bit of work. In fact, it requires a lot of work for us to be able to achieve the transformation that is envisaged in the Constitution and in the Superior Court Act. And that is a separate project that we are going to commence in the current financial year going forward. We are also responsible for the legislation founding the National Prosecuting Authority only insofar as our responsibility is the accounting authority, which is the minister, and accounting officer, which is myself. We are also responsible for, broadly speaking, the funding arrangements between the two organizations and the like. And so that legislation, together with legislation on the Special Investigations Unit, will be part of the work that we will be doing this year and going forward in the normal course of administration of justice, and nothing more specific than that. Legislation providing for the functioning of other bodies such as Legal Aid South Africa, we bear certain responsibilities there. We bear certain responsibilities in the legislation dealing with law reform and rulemaking, and finally legislation dealing with the Master of the High Court. Chairperson, I will not deal with all of that because we are not showing the Honourable House the legislation that we are going to deal with in our presentation. Suffice perhaps, Chair, if I may, deal only with G in the slide, which is the protection of vulnerable groups in terms of the Child Justice Act, the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, as well as the maintenance and domestic violence legislation. Those we will also be presenting specifically, dealing specifically in our presentation with the actual work that we do in that regard. Chair, in this slide, in the
our sitting lines, we seek to show the Honorable House how we have deemed our work in the annual performance plan within the requirements or the directives arising from the National Development Plan. Chair, we take the National Development Plan chapter by chapter where we believe we are relevant or we have actions that we must deliver. We will highlight those chapters in specific terms. So we start with a chapter on social protection. In this chapter, we do a lot of work. We have a service turnaround in the maintenance services. Chair, this is one area where, whilst there may still be challenges on the ground, and indeed they are, but we have made significant progress compared to the past, call it 3 to 5 years ago. We've improved both in providing services, but we also improved the speed with which those services have been provided to the South Africans. We've also implemented ICT systems, which assist us in the improvement of service provision. We've trained quite significantly and capacitated the courts quite significantly in the area of maintenance provision. In the master's environment, Chair, we've done significantly better than we had over many years. It's one area and one service in our portfolio of services that are offered by the department directly where we can say without a shadow of doubt that the electronic systems that we've introduced there are almost unparalleled in our own business. I'm not comparing us to other people, just in our own business, they are unparalleled. And we are using the master's office as a module for the entirety of the department to ensure that we move our services and power them electronically. Chapter 11, still under social protection, an additional service that we had done quite badly a year ago is the family advocate. We've introduced a lot of initiatives to improve the performance of the family advocate. Broadly speaking, our focus this year are going to be on the improvement of mediation services towards the full compliance with legislation. Now, in this area, Chair, if I may contextualize, what has happened in 2010, we had introduced legislation, the civil jurisdiction legislation, which had created, given jurisdiction to courts that previously did not have jurisdiction to deal with family law cases. And as a result, we didn't do a concomitant capacity of the Office of the Family Advocate. As a result, they then went far behind in terms of the overall performance. So we spent the whole of 2013-2014 financial year correcting that by giving them a bit of capacity, but also by sharpening their focus in terms of their own targets and ensuring that they are performing. We also adjusted the targets somewhat, so this year they have performed and overshot those targets, and we are now going to go and normalize for the next financial year's APP. Then we move to Chapter 12, which deals with the building of safer communities. In this area, Chair, the biggest work that the previous administration had agreed to and the current administration has also confirmed is that the work on the 7-point plan must continue. And this work arose from the revamping of the criminal justice review, which was occasioned by the slowness of cases in court at a particular point in time. We've made progress in this area, Chair, but going forward, we will be increasing certain capacity, in particular, the utilization of audiovisual remand system. And this is the system that we members remember when we get to that point. We've improved management of criminal appeal processes as well as reviews. We are decreasing the rate of court postponements due to administrative challenges. This is an area where we are measuring for the first time this year, 2014-2015, because we want to know, as a matter of fact, what is the contribution of the Department of Justice official systems, infrastructure, to the delays in the court cases and the finalization of cases. So we've introduced few indicators that will enable us to know and then manage those things down. Chair, just as a matter of interest, Illegal Aid South Africa has undertaken a study which they will obviously speak to the committee themselves if need be, but they've undertaken a study that is beginning to give an indication of who contributes what towards the delays in cases going forward, and we would want to address those issues as a department almost immediately in areas where we have been identified to contribute those delays. Then we are working on systems that are going to create a seamless information gathering and reporting systems within the criminal justice system across the totality of the value chain. And then we've developed a number of protocols to improve court efficiency, and some of those protocols we believe are working very well. Part of this work, Chair, of building safer communities is to ensure that every community, as far as possible, gets services closer to its own doorstep. As a result of this, we are going to continue with the project of converting branch courts into full service courts so that people are not only receiving criminal services in their environment, criminal court services in their own environment, but rather receive other services such as maintenance and the like within their own environment. We are currently aligning magisterial boundaries with municipal boundaries to improve access to court. Obviously, if this Honourable House has a bit of time on its hands, which I doubt, going forward, this is one project we are very excited about, and time permitting, we would want to come and present it to this Honourable House as it will affect members at one point or the other. So we remain available to come and make that presentation if so requested. We will also continue, obviously, with the building of courts to bring access to justice. There are specific projects, Honourable Chair, which we are undertaking in our own environment, which ensures or contributes towards building safer communities. One of those projects is the re-establishment of dedicated sexual offences courts. Chair, this I need not explain in too much detail, but in the past few years we've had a serious scourge of sexual violence, particularly against children. And these courts have been reintroduced not only to address that because it's necessary, but also to respond to that scourge. Similarly, we've done a lot of work to protect the dignity and the interests of people in the LGBTI community, which is the lesbians, gays, bisexual, transsex, and intersex community. The reason why we've done that work, Chair, is because we've seen in the past 2 years, at most maybe three, a recent upsurge in violence against them, either through rape, beatings, and the like. And our view is that they too are South Africans, and they must enjoy the benefits of the Constitution and be treated like any other civilian, any other person in South Africa. So we've done a policy framework, we've done terms of reference, we are already working together with civil society in this area. And may I add that this is one area where we've worked with most non-governmental organizations, human rights organizations, as well as civil society. And it's one project that if we continue this way, it will assist us in generating that relationship in other projects where we are struggling at this particular point in time. we are going to continue with the work on the National Action Plan against domestic violence. We've treated domestic violence as a key area that requires focus, again, for reasons that are best known to all of us as South Africans, and that work is going to continue. We are continuing with the project of including the names of those people who are charged with sexual violence against children as well as people with mental disabilities. That work is going to continue into this year and the succeeding years in terms of the act. And then we are fast-tracking those cases where violence has arisen as a matter of or arising from protests, whether of a service delivery nature or any other nature of a protest. The most important work that we did last year was the amendment to the schedules of the Drugs Act where we included Nyaube and Nunga as drugs that are controlled the right way, I think it is. These are Nyaube in particular and Nunga in parts of the country is very, very destructive and is very easily available, and obviously to assist the National Prosecuting Authority, but broadly to assist South Africans, we have had to ensure that these drugs are listed, particularly the Department of Health, because it is then saddled with the medical responsibility after these people have destroyed themselves in these drugs. There is work, Chair, that we are doing under building a capable state, and that work is probably primarily focusing on developing everybody in the department in obviously as reasonably possible. But in this particular area, Chair, we are going to talk about SAWLA. Here we are in partnership with the South African Women Lawyers Association, and we do a lot of work. This work is seasonal, I must add. During the Women's Month, we do a lot of interventions there, but we also do some other work on an ongoing basis in times of need. And generally, in our partnership, talk to the training of lawyers in part, but also talk to the opportunity of giving candidate attorneys an opportunity to work there, and also the wheels and the like work that gets done during the month of August. We intend continuing with this partnership, Chair. It was time-bound, but we feel we have gained some level of benefit, and we hope our partners have also gained the similar benefits. Similarly, we have a partnership with the South African Charter on the International Association of Women Judges, which we pay for. Obviously, we don't go through this training ourselves because we are not judges, Chair, but we expose the judges of various levels of court to this training, and the department pays for that training going forward. In the department, specifically, starting from last year, we approved that a minimum of 20 women go through a full, extensive executive leadership development program for women in the department as the first intake, and we hope to continue this trend going forward. The reason we went for this is because we want to groom our own people, grow our own timber, as they say, so that people can begin to be placed in position of succession a lot more quicker than we would otherwise have done before. We continue to train through Justice College on a number of areas. Justice College Chairperson, as opposed to the South African Judicial Education Institute, which focuses on the judges and the magistrates. Justice College focuses on ourselves in training us on how to manage finances and all of that of the department, but it also trains in relation to the law and the legal specific requirements for people like the interpreters, the the prosecutors, the clerks of court, and the like. So we do the training through Justice College. Justice College also trains where we have international agreements, on those cooperation agreements, generally we have the training requirements, and they have been, we've been using the instrument called Justice College to be able to offer our responsibilities in terms of training. We have a number of bursaries and bursars that benefit from these bursaries. If you look at the third bullet, we have 1,481 bursaries that we have issued, and we will continue because we do believe the minister has spoken not so long ago, I think last week sometime, when he appeared here in this honorable house, that we must focus on building youth, and this is how in part we are focusing on building youth, but in other areas we will show slightly later. Just to give a breakdown of how these bursaries have been awarded and will continue to be awarded, currently 789 bursars will be female, African female, 463 will be African male, the colored female 13, the colored male 57, and so on and so on. The focus, I'd like to focus on the last column, which is people living with disabilities, that we are intending to grow that number, but that is the number that we currently have in our books as we speak. Then, in focusing on youth development, we've got a few programs that we've been doing in the recent past, but we are going to continue with those programs. So for 2013-2014 financial year, for learnerships, we had 308 learnerships, but we had very few internships. And there's a reason why we had few internships. Previously, the internships, we were doing them with SAULA, so the candidates will be resident in SAULA environment. And now, last year, we decided to take over our own interns and so that they do internships in the Department of Justice as we grow, so that we grow with them. So you will see that the numbers this year, we are going to have 550 interns. We've reduced a bit on the number of learnerships, but towards the end of the year, we might take a bigger number. The reason why we reduced a bit is that we had entered into a contract with SAFITA on the learnership. They gave us a particular number, but we had a struggle with the balance of the number in terms of payments on their side, and we decided not to take too big a number that we couldn't manage going forward. Then, part of what building a capable state talks to is not only to focus on people, but it's also to focus on systems. In the past few years and going forward into the future, we are investing in ICMS systems, which basically is the ICT system that assists us in managing cases in our courts. We are using this as well in the state attorney's, albeit that we have only started doing that for the state attorney this year. But part of our transformation of state legal services would then demand that we do a lot more ICT in the state attorney's office going forward. We are going to continue with the implementation of the integrated justice system, which we've been doing over the past few years, but we've just ramped up both in terms of capacity in that office as well as capacity within the cluster to be able to manage these projects correctly. Chatterton, the biggest problem that we've had as the Department of Justice over the years has been managing third-party funds, and these are maintenance monies, bail, state attorneys, bonds, those types of monies, funds. This is where we've had, when people say colleagues in justice don't shoot these monies well, we can't account for them, this is the area that we have had a problem in. Chatterton, it is our contention that we are turning that corner. At this stage, we've done everything needed to be done. We are procuring the system, and the system is not going to solve our problem, Chair, but the system is going to assist us to account better, given all the work that we've done on the change management in terms of people and all of that. We will talk about that perhaps on a different day. Video remarks. and I have already spoken to. Promotion of accountability and fighting corruption. Specifically in this area, Chair, the NDP, amongst others, talks about scaling up judicial training dramatically and as quickly as possible. This is contextual training because all judges are already professionals in what they do, Chair. Our role in this, we don't train the judges necessarily, but the judges are trained through the South African Judicial Education Institute, and it is currently located in the Office of the Chief Justice. What we are saying there, however, Chair, is that we need to improve its governance arrangements by moving a bill that will locate the SAJ in the OCJ environment correctly, because right now it is currently located by legislation in the Department of Justice, and yet training has moved to the Office of the Chief Justice. That is all that we are saying there, Chair. We want to also, when the NDP asks us to accelerate reforms to implement a judiciary-led independent court administration, we are going to be working this year, Chair, on the discussion document that will then finalize this whole end state of the judiciary-led court administration. In the meantime, Chair, we've made a lot of contributions towards the establishment of the Office of the Chief Justice, the appointment of the Secretary General, who was here earlier, the capacitation of that office up to and including here, and we are now finalizing work on our part on the assignment and delegations of functions to them, and finally the creation of the votes by National Treasury. We are required by the NDP to establish a clear criteria for the appointment of judges with emphasis on the candidate's progressive credentials and transformatory judicial philosophy and expertise. It's a big thing that we must do in this area, Chair. Our view is that we must consider, amongst others, because they do speak about judicial philosophy, there's some level of research that must happen behind the scenes to enable us to put before this Honourable House a bill that seeks to address the requirement of point 3 of the NDP. We will start with that work this year, Chair. Our view is that by the time the year end comes, which is the 31st of March, we may not be complete in the actual drafting of the bill, but we'll be pushing ourselves quite extensively to achieve that. We are required to consider the structure and the effectiveness of the Judicial Service Commission, and this responsibility now lies with the Office of the Chief Justice. However, our minister still remains a responsible minister, and therefore we will have to provide support in this regard. Consider the extension of community service to legal graduates to promote speedy finalization of cases, particularly in lower court. In this case, Chair, the legal practice bill was already finalized by this Honourable House. That bill will assist us in providing for legal services through using the offices of practitioners to offer these legal services almost on a pro bono basis. In addition, Chair, we are creating capacity in the department which will ensure that all the things that are required in terms of this legislation are undertaken as soon as the legislation, what the bill is accepted to. Now, we move to the actual cases that have been undertaken in the past relating to responding to Chapter 14, which is promotion of accountability and the fighting of corruption. More than 800 persons are currently under criminal investigation of one sort or one level or the other in relation to financial and forensic investigations. Some are already on pre-trial proceedings initiated against them, and the number there is 298 persons at the end of December 2013. The actual trial proceedings have been initiated against 174 persons by the end of December 2013. And in June 2013, the JCPS cluster demonstrated its commitment to deal with corruption by releasing a list of names. At that point, they were 42, and I think in the past few months, they moved to 47, and I think we are sitting at roughly about 50, if not 52 names as we speak, of people that have been convicted of fraud and corruption. Here we are talking about a particular bracket, and that bracket is a bracket of 5 million gains, illicit gains that would have been obtained as a result of those corrupt practices. Or the correct number is 48. And then we've done a lot of freezing orders. Obviously, all this work is done through the NPA. We are represented by the NPA in this area. The freezing orders against 67 persons. Within the department in this area, we have a number of initiatives. We have a number of awareness programs. We also vet people for some levels of criminality. So if people have committed criminal acts, particularly we are focusing on our vetting in supply chain management, because that's an area that we always struggle with in terms, not just as a Department of Justice, but generally procurement is the most vulnerable area that we must take care of. Then we move to chapter 15, which is transforming society and uniting the country. In this area, our APP will show that we are implementing a number of human rights legislation, including the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the PAJA. In this area, Chair, we have a partnership with the German Funding Institute that assist us in funding our project, in producing the material that we deal with on PAJA, as well as the communication and the education around PAJA. In the 2014-2015 financial year, we will be increasing our efforts and our capacity in building initiatives for government departments and identified provinces on the application of PAJA. This work, in particular, is led by the the governance class, I guess, that I couldn't remember. This work, we contribute and we report it through the GNA cluster of government. And the most training that we do under the Justice College. We also do a lot of work on Bahia. Chair, before you ask us questions, on this area, having seen our performance in the previous year where we underperformed on prior year, let me offer the explanation in areas now. We have seen a serious upsurge on appeals that have arisen. And this upsurge of appeals has resulted, I think we're talking about the complaints relating to appeals moving from the region of about 250 to 280, the upsurge to 700 and some odd. 758, I think, is the number. And you don't have to think. The reason why I'm explaining this is because you will then ask, what were we doing during this period? We can show the numbers in exact terms. They are hyperlinked to the presentation, but we won't, in the interest of time. We were not in town. We were very much at White Chair, but there are a number of indicators that worked militated against positive performance. All these appeals that were launched were appeals that we didn't have documents for or the transcripts for, and that work, we've introduced projects to try and fast-track that work so that our turnaround in relation to FIRE requests improve. But in every other area of requests, we have done relatively well, except in these appeals that have come in bucket low. Now, Promotion of Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. We've done a lot of work in this area, Chair. We had prepared a policy instrument that was to serve, and it did serve in cabinet, in the cabinet committee last year.
Commission for Human Rights, and this is the area where we've done very well over the years, Chair, except just for this year, due to specific problems which we deal with when we deal with our annual report, and we are refining those areas so that going forward we go back to our good performance by the Foundation for Human Rights. The other issues, Chair, which is the National Action Plan Against Racism, as well as the National Policy on LGBTI, I have already covered. The area of PRC work, Chair, will continue. We've been talking about regulations forever and a day, and please don't despair, because we've done a lot of work in this area, Chair. There are areas, however, that we are not going to be able to make significant progress on, and this is in the regulations for the PRC, specifically relating to health regulations, because there, the Department of Health will first amend its own legislation to enable us to get those regulations going. We have a good partnership now. We have found each other, and we are quite confident that we are going to meet our targets today. Chair, when we talk about, there's an error in the slide, slide 26, where we talk about Section 6 of the Constitution. We, in the presentation that was distributed, you said Chapter 6. We meant Section 6, and I want to apologize for that. So when you read it, don't read it to read Chapter 6. Read it to read Section 6. I apologize for that. Oh, sorry. The last bullet talks about other initiatives that to bring information to, especially about vulnerable groups, to most people that need it. We've done a lot of translations into various languages, but we've also translated our materials in Braille, especially the materials that affect vulnerable groups, your sexual offences materials, your maintenance materials, your domestic violence materials, we are now doing them in Braille as well, and we are in the close to finalizing the translation of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa also in Braille, since we've translated all versions in all languages, the Constitution can now be found. Now we move to our MTSF medium term strategic framework work that we do. Some of it, because I have already shown you how we've linked it to the National Development Plan, may sound like a repetition. Indeed it is, but we still have to present it like this to show you, in terms of the MTSF, what are we going to be doing and where are we going to do that work. So I will go very quickly through the areas that we have already covered. We want to increase the conviction rate in sexual offences. We want, in particular, relating to the trio crimes. These are robbery at residential premises level, robbery at business level, and vehicle robberies and car hijacking. We want to increase conviction rates, but generally in all the cases that we are doing, obviously through the NPA, we would want to see improved performance. We are developing a criminal justice business plan that is going to guide us from now to 2019, aligning all our work in the APP going forward. We will be addressing a number of criminal backlog cases in our various courts. Chairperson, if I may pause on this one, we've conducted quite a number of criminal backlog courts to permanent courts, because we realized that we had so many backlog courts, and therefore there is a demand in those areas. We are trying to reduce them down to mean so that all of those that we're serving as backlog courts are converted into full-time courts going forward. We are improving our KPI measurements within the criminal justice system work, and this is a project, Chair, not just the KPI thing, but the IJS project, the integrated justice system. If the Honourable House has the time in the future, is one of the projects we'd want to come and present as well. Transformation Commission of State Legal Services. This is a new project, Chair. We started the consent document in 2011, 2012 financial year. We actually started to do the work last financial year. And where we are going forward is to ensure that we fast track the transformation of the state legal services. Our focus specifically is going to be on the state attorney in the first instance. Reason being that there are a number of issues that are highlighted, the prescription of claims involving government, the default judgments that are taken against government, the lack of monitoring systems over the work and output of state attorneys and advocates, the inconsistency in how we determine fees for counsel, as well as the low success rate in cases against the state. To address this, we then introduced a number of interventions. There was a policy framework that was approved by Cabinet, as I've indicated. That policy framework, amongst others, also emphasized the point that briefs are not given, at least the qualitative briefs are not given sufficiently to PDIs, and we must address that, and that is what we are seeking to do. Part of the broader transformation of state legal services speaks to the appointment of the Solicitor General, who is going to be the head of the state attorney and state legal services going forward. We've amended the state attorney's act to ensure that that has happened, and we are grateful to this Honorable House for having moved that legislation quite swiftly to enable us to do the appointment. We are now doing the administrative bit to ensure that that appointment happens. Transformation of the judicial system and the role of the judiciary in the developmental state. This project, Chair, has become very exciting, at least to me anyway, as a person, not as a DG. This is the project when we first issued the terms of reference, and we started speaking about it last year. It received very, very negative response publicly from people saying that we wanted to interfere with the judiciary. No matter how hard we try to explain that this is not interference with the judiciary, we just want to know how much have our lives changed due to the decisions of these two courts, the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. We have since received a report, an interim report, I must add, which must now be processed by the governance processes that must ensure the quality of the report and all of that, give feedback, and then we can get the final report at the end of this. We are really hopeful, at least from what I've read in the report reads very well, but I can't speak to it because it's not a final product as yet. And I must add, Chair, that the service providers that we appointed have interviewed and are going to continue interviewing not just the people in government. They are interviewing civil society, they are interviewing the judiciary, they are interviewing everybody. So it's a very, at least, objective report, at least the elements that we've already read from the report. We are hoping that that project will be finalized within the 18-month period that the project was given. We are starting the work on developing the blueprint on the transformation of the lower courts and the court administration. I indicated earlier we were going to speak to this later in the presentation. This is the part. We have been doing work on the transformation of the superior courts, which are your high courts, your Supreme Court of Appeal, and your constitutional court. Now that work has been finalized, that finalization was signaled by the approval by this Honorable House of the Superior Court Act, as well as the 17th Constitution Amendment Act. Now we are moving to the lower courts, because in the final analysis, the Constitution talks about the transformation of the courts, meaning all the courts, not just the high courts. And our efforts in the past, however many years, has been on the high courts. So the development of this blueprint is now going to give us a roadmap, as it were, on how we are going to transform the law. lower cost going forward. And then finally, we are going to be looking at the, in this blueprint, the nature of the services that are going to be provided, the nature of the court establishments, lower court establishments that we are going to have, the governance mechanisms, the norms and standards, and the like. Not so long ago, Chair, we processed the work on the insolvency policy. This policy is basically dealing with an industry that has not moved in terms of the level of transformation from when we started to now. Chair would recall that the insolvency environment is regulated by the very old Insolvency Act. I think it's 1936. Yes, 1936 Act. And as a result of that, we needed to move with the times. One of the things that we needed to do was to put together a policy as required by the Act and ensure that that policy is implemented once we overhaul the complete Insolvency Act. We did that work. We finalized it as we had said we would. We were told by the stakeholders, the insolvency industry, that they were going to take us to court. True to form, they did. And we have therefore been interdicted from implementing the policy from the 31st of March. That interdict is going to last until 13th of October this year, at which point we are expected to have done certain things. We have done the amendment, and we will be moving through a cabinet process to ensure that that amendment is effective. Chair, however, I must add, regardless of that amendment, the insolvency sector is still going to challenge us because they do not want the transformation that we are bringing about. So it's not about the constitutionality or otherwise of the policy, but it's more about are we taking away that which they were accustomed to. This is a sector with a lot of money, and obviously in the past papers, members would have read the complaints and even the threats of wanting to move away from a structured insolvency environment into an informal insolvency environment. And these are very reputable people who are suggesting this. So there's a lot of work that must be done outside the formalization of the policy environment in terms of engaging and ensuring that we come together at least closer to each other. I must thank this House for the legal practice bill finalized by this Honourable House, awaiting ascension at this point. We are doing a lot of work, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in this regard, given the fact that the legal practice bill suggests a new arrangement altogether in terms of institutional arrangements, which must be put in place as soon as the bill has been ascended to. That is the work that we will probably come and brief the committee on from time to time as we make progress on. I will not speak to all of those issues, Chair. Suffice to say they are contained in the presentation, and I do think that they will take too much time, and I'm concerned with the time. We can come and speak in specific terms on them if need be. I would therefore pass. Then I move to showing the Honourable House the strategic goals from 1 to 5. These strategic goals, again, are contained in the presentation. We want to enhance organizational performance on all aspects of administration in line with the set standards and meeting and exceeding the aspirations of our key stakeholders, in the main, the South Africans. To facilitate the resolution of criminal and civil and family law disputes, as we have been doing previously. And finally, the fifth goal, I'm taking them as granted, is the promotion of constitution and its values. And this is the area we're going to be doing a lot more work on. Chair, maybe on just strategic goal number 4. We have put this goal in when we, the Department of Justice, and our minister, as a consequence, was the leader and convener of the JCPS cluster. That responsibility has now since been given to the Ministry of Defence. However, we still have a responsibility to convene, because because the justice family is quite broad, all the initiatives that each of us are doing to contribute to the to our country going forward, and that is why we have retained it, and we are not going to change it going forward. All right. Okay. Now, I've already indicated our link with the National Development Plan, the MTSF, the policy guidance, the centrality of the public as consumers of our services, the particular principles that guide us. Obviously, we do this within limited resources that we get given by National Treasury as well as the donors in some areas where we receive donor funding. And all of this put together guides how we are going to spend these resources in delivering the services that we must deliver. We are grateful to the guidance that we have received from the Auditor General in the past very many years, because all of that has assisted us in improving our performance as the department. We've made key changes, Chair, to our document. We've included the IJS-related indicators under Program 5. We didn't have that before, and so for reporting purposes, we are obliged to inform this Honorable House where the changes have been made, and this is where the changes have been made. We've aligned the NDP and the MTSF. We've included two indicators under the finalization and recommendation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And those relate to the exhumations as well as community rehabilitation. We've included an indicator under improved human resources, in particular the number of policies and legislation assessed for gender mainstreaming. May I correct that? It's gender mainstreaming. And this is a critical area, Chair, of our work, because in terms of the gender machinery, we are supposed to be responsive. Our policies must be gender friendly, and we are thinking through this year through this exercise. We've identified a few risks that are going to haunt us going forward. The first one, which we've indicated in this House previously, albeit that there are new members, is the occupation-specific dispensation. Basically, in very brief terms, what this means is that during the 2007-2008 public service strike, the OSD was introduced for the very first time. OSD is supposed to be for those category of professionals in the department who are specialists, and therefore they don't do the things we do, which is administration. They only do legal work. They are called production people. We have a problem there, Chase. One of the reasons of that problem is our own making. When OSD was implemented, we didn't implement it entirely correctly, and so we are being punished quite severely for that. In areas relating to occupational specific level 9 and level 10 in particular, but 10 is the one that is the bigger problem than all of them. But the other is not a problem of our own making. It's the problem of design of OSD. When we present on the annual report, we will clarify this issue in a little area. Suffice to say, for the purposes of this presentation, of all the risks we have right now, this is the biggest risk, because we can't employ state attorneys at level 10. Level 10 is almost a supervisory level. That real big state attorney that we must be appointing, we can't until we've resolved all the issues around OSD. And which is why then the quality of work of the state attorney will suffer if they don't have people that are supervising their work. We are saying there's a risk to the migration of the Office of the Chief Justice, just because in any area where there are mergers and acquisitions, you have risk of merging cultures and all of that, and it's a risk that we are going to be managing going forward. DPW remains a big risk for us, both in our rental portfolio, lease portfolio, as well as the capital work portfolio, both in terms of not finishing projects on time, but also not maintaining buildings. we have a big problem. We are engaging with public works, so they know what I'm saying to this Honourable House. It's not something that I have not said before. FITA remains a big problem in our performance systems. In our ICT, we still procure through FITA, and we are really, really suffering in this environment. And the other challenge is that we started seeing our properties being threatened in areas of service disruptions where they have nothing to do with justice, but just by virtue of the fact that these are government properties, they then become at risk. There are funding constraints, which obviously we wouldn't leave this Honourable House without telling you where we have limitations. The Child Justice Act is a very labour-intensive legislation, and it is leaving us with a shortfall. I don't want to say it's a shortfall, it's a constraint, because we continue to be able to do the work, but we could do better had we had the resources. The Children's Act is the same issue. The transformation of state legal services in particular is going to be a challenge, but we are going to try and fund it within our own resources. Some funding constraints that are going to be even more pronounced are going to be in the legal practice bill, the Protection of Personal Information Act, in particular because the two pieces of legislation require the establishment of certain bodies, the legal practice bill being the forum or the council, and the Protection of Personal Information Act being the regulator. And then we have challenges with Older Persons Act, as well as the Protection from Harassment Act. Other legislation where we have not implemented because of some challenges is the trafficking legislation. And there, the problem is the regulations by other departments. We've been doing a lot of talking and hugging behind the scenes to ensure that those regulations are finalized by those who must provide the regulations and directives. So we hope that that work will be finalized soon. Other areas where we have funding constraints, my colleagues will demand that I stay here and never go back if I don't talk about security as the big risk. Our business is expanding, our security budget is shrinking at the rate of a heartbeat. We are grateful for the support this Honourable House has given us in pleading and recommending for additional funding, which we've used quite wisely, except in areas where I will indicate why we have underspent in. But it's also covered in the presentation that we've circulated. We continue to increase our costs, but because our courts are very old as we speak, and I'm now at bullet E, we run the risk of damage of that infrastructure because it was never built for the capacity that it is servicing. And therefore, we need to improve our occupational health and safety management in those buildings. I will not go through each one of these because they speak to areas of capacity. Now, I'd like to speak to this area. When the minister presented in this Honourable House last week or so, we were asked why, after all the hard work the Parliament did in finding money for us, when we had come here cap in hand, did we underspend? We regret, Honourable Members, the fact that we underspent in the following areas. In infrastructure, in ICT, in the main, those are the two areas with ring-fenced budgets, which we can use for any other thing except those areas where we must use the money. And that is why we underspend. In addition, I think we had about 10 million that we had transferred to the Office of the Chief Justice for them to start their ICT work as well, and they too were not able to spend that money, which they returned to us, in fact, on the eve of year-end, and obviously all of that added into our portfolio of under expenditure. There were two additional projects that were that we kind of halted on, and it was the policy on PECUDA as well as the National Action Plan Against Racism. And the part that we stopped doing during that period was public engagement on those two policies. And those were going to cost us a lot of money, and we didn't do that. Not because we didn't want to, in case a question arises, but because we were requested by cabinet to hold on them for a particular period while certain processes were being undertaken. Thank you very much. We now move to individual strategic objectives. Chair, at this point, I've been talking for a very long time.